Good evening, everyone. This is Terry Lynn Koop sitting in for Pam Stack on Authors in the Air, and tonight we have an In Conversation with Jennifer Kinchlow and Lori Rader Day. First, I'm going to introduce our guest moderator, Jennifer. Jennifer is a research scientist turned writer of historical fiction. Her novels take place in 1900s Los Angeles among the police matrons of the LAPD. They combine mystery, history, humor, and romance. The Woman in the Camphor Trunk will be released in November of 2017, and we're going to hear about that. Her debut novel, The Secret Life of Anna Blanc, was a finalist in the Lefty Awards for Best Historical Mystery, the Colorado Authors League Award for Best Genre Fiction, the McCavity Sue Fetter Award for Historical Winner, Miss Mystery, and is the winner of the Mystery and Mayhem Award for Historical Mystery and the Colorado Gold for Best Mystery. Jennifer, good evening and welcome to Authors on the Air.
Thank you so much.
Lori into the conversation and let's go.
I'll introduce Lori Rader Day. Her debut mystery, The Black Hour, won the 2015 Anthony Award for Best First Novel. Her second novel, Little Pretty Things, won the 2016 Mary Higgins Clark Award. Little Pretty Things was named a 2015 Most Arresting Crime Novel by Kirkus Reviews and one of the top 10 crime novels of the year by Booklist. Her latest book, The Day I Died, also came out to critical acclaim and will no doubt soon be nominated for everything, like her first two books. Lori is a dog person and a Prince fan. She prefers tea to coffee, pants to dresses. She knows how to rock a pair of Converse tennis shoes. Also, she's one of the funniest people I know. So welcome, Lori.
Oh, thanks. No pressure there.
I've read all three of your novels, and I was a little nervous going into book three because your first two were so fabulous, and my expectations were sky high, and you knocked it out of the park. So congratulations on a third wonderful book.
Thank you so much.
And so I thought one way to start this interview would be to learn your origin story and how you became the mystery writer you are today.
Well, I started writing when I was really young. I think I remember writing for the first time when I was about 6 or 7 years old. Obviously not very much and not very seriously, but it was just I was a big reader and I was a big fan of the Beverly Cleary, Ramona Quimby books. I was a big fan of Ramona Quimby, and I realized there was this other name on the front cover of the book, and I didn't know who Beverly Cleary was, and then I realized, oh, there's this person who's writing the stories that I love, which means there are people who write stories, which means maybe I could write a story. So my first attempt at writing was a Ramona Quimby fan fiction, but I didn't get very far. I don't think I finished anything until I was probably in junior high or high school, and probably only because it was for a grade. And
do you
then,
have any of these early works?
Oh, God, no. I'm really hoping that no one else does either. It's a possibility that my first finished story had a unicorn in it. So, you know, unicorn fiction is just the next big thing. I'm sure of it. So I'm ready. I'm ready for it.
I'm sure it is thrilling.
It probably was many things, but probably not thrilling. But it was, you know, it was thrilling to finish something. I think it was, you know, like a step in the progression of becoming a writer was learning how to finish a story, even though it may have had a unicorn in it. And then in high school, I did a little bit of writing, not as much as I would like to have done. And then in college, I started writing more because I had people asking for my stories. There were people in my dorm who were really interested in reading the next story.
Wow.
I think because I was sneaking people from our dorm into the stories, and so they wanted to see who I would choose next and what I would say about them. But that gave me an audience and then also kind of deadlines. You know, people were asking for stories, and I had incentive to finish them. And
were
then
they
when I graduated.
Stories? Oh, go ahead.
What? No,
were they
weren't. Nothing. You know, I think maybe one of the early stories I wrote in high school might have had a mystery thing going on. I'm not sure I finished that one, though. But I didn't really know I was a mystery writer. I wasn't a mystery writer for a long time. When I graduated, I sort of, you know, got lost in the shuffle. I didn't read as much. I didn't write as much. I was always complaining about not having any writing time, but I just wasn't doing it. And then when I started to get serious about things, that's when I became a mystery writer. But I had to be told I was a mystery writer. So I didn't know.
Who told you that?
So I actually went into an essay program, a Master of Fine Arts program, and I was writing, you know, just fiction. I don't know that I ever called it anything other than just fiction. There were people there that wrote other things, young adult. I think we had some people who wrote, sci-fi, fantasy, but I was just writing, you know, whatever, straight-up fiction. And then one of the stories that I was writing had crime in it. And also around the same time that I was writing this story, I was showing it to one of my teachers, and she said, well, it's not a short story, it's a novel. Keep writing.
Ooh.
Which was easy for her to say, right? I had never written a novel before.
It
was probably about 40 or 50 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't outside the realm of a short story, but I think what she meant was there's more capacity in the story than just these pages, and I think you could make it into a novel if you tried. So I had that to think about. And then I sent about 10 or 15 of those pages off to a program that Midwest Writers Workshop used to have, where they would invite 9 writers, aspiring writers, to come and work with a professional for just a couple days in northern Indiana. And I got accepted into that with this story that was suddenly supposed to be a novel. And when I got there, there were 3 groups. It was fiction in one corner, nonfiction in the other, and then mystery. And they had put me in the mystery group with Terrence Verity, who was the teacher, and then 2 other people who knew they were writing mystery and were really excited to work with Terry. And they, you know, they knew all about his work. And they were like, oh, he's an Edgar Award winner. I thought, okay, but I don't know that I'm not writing a mystery, I don't think. So I did one of those raising my hands and saying, Mr. Faraday, I think I might be in the wrong group. And he was super nice about it, but he said, well, I read your 10 pages, and it has a crime in it. Are you going to solve that crime? And I had to think about it because I didn't know. You know, I just been told it was a novel. So as far as I was concerned, the story was kind of done at 50 pages, where I was not solving the crime. And if I was going to turn it into a, you know, 300-page thing, would I solve the crime? Yeah, I think I would. So I said, yes, I think I would solve that crime. And he's like, yeah, that's cool, a mystery. Maybe, you know, just consider it. You might be writing a mystery novel. And that was super helpful, of course, because when I knew I was writing a mystery, then I knew what I had to do. I had the shape of the story was, of course, then to solve that crime. That book is actually the one that just got published, by the way.
I was going to just about ask you to ask you about that. And I was going to ask you if that book was hard to write, because your first 2 books were so successful, and I thought you had at least one of them in a drawer. Did you have Pretty Little Things in a drawer?
No, The Day I Died is the drawer
That's
novel.
That's the one you had in the drawer. So was it,
yeah,
when you wrote Little Pretty Things, were you just feeling tremendous pressure because The Black Hour was so successful?
I think, yeah, a little bit. I mean, not tremendous pressure. I started writing Little Pretty Things when I was still sending The Black Hour, my first book, to be published out to find an agent. So as soon as I was looking for an agent, you know, with this one manuscript, then I started writing the next one. And I did myself the favor of being pretty far along by the time, you know, The Black Hour was even accepted somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
7th Street Books, obviously, you know, same publisher, bought it. And then there's, you know, that lag of time between the fact that they bought it and then the time that they're going to be putting it on the shelf. And in that time, I was able to write Little Pretty Things. So I actually wrote Little Pretty Things, you know, not entirely while things, you know, weren't going on. I was writing it while I was promoting the Black Hour, but I was finished writing it by the time it started picking up an award here and there. Now, I have a little bit of pressure with The Day I Died because I was pulling something out of the drawer and telling people that I'm pulling it out of the drawer. You know, a book that's been sitting for 6 or 7 years and I'm going to pluck it out and make it better. I think there's a certain kind of pressure to that because you want to make sure that it's good, not just there. So I felt a lot of pressure to make sure that it was good enough to come out of the drawer.
Can I jump in for just 1 second, y'all?
Jump in.
I wanted to open up the phone lines to anyone who might want to call in. It's 347-633-9609, and the first caller will get an Amazon gift card from the studio. So continue, just ignore the host in the background, and I'll let you know if anybody calls in. Thank you.
That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. So now you're presumably working on your next book, right?
I am, you may presume.
And do you feel confident now that you've got three solid books behind you, or do you feel pressure?
I think you want me to tell you that it gets easier.
I
can't do it. I think it doesn't get easier in a lot of ways. I think you do get better at certain parts of the job. I think you get a little more able to focus on the things you need to focus on and to not get hung up in the things that you shouldn't get hung up on, like reviews and that sort of thing. But I think, I don't think the writing is necessarily easier. Some of your instincts are better. You know, some of your ability to get the story shaped is better. But I think, you know, a new story is a new story, and every story is going to have its own problems and its own frustrations. And, yeah, I don't think I can tell you that it gets super easy, but I think it doesn't get harder exactly. But it's also, you are working on more things than, I wrote my first two novels when I was working full-time.
Right.
I wrote my first one when I was working full-time, but then I wrote my second one when I was working full-time and promoting the first one. So that was, you know, that was kind of tough doing all those things at the same time. At the moment, I am a full-time writer, but I have lots of other things going on, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I have figured out how to use my time better. I can definitely procrastinate just as well as I ever could.
I think a lot of people see writers who've gotten their books published and they're like, wow, you know, you've done it. And I think the perception is that it's, you know, it's downhill from there. And I think many readers may not realize how hard it is to write. In fact, I've had many writers tell me that they don't even like writing. They feel compelled to write, and they like having written. So I was going to ask you, do you love writing, or do you love having written?
I love writing on the days when writing is lovable, but I don't necessarily love it every day. There are days when it's just, just pulling at your hair hard. I always say it's not ditch digging, right? It's not a physically hard job, but it's, I don't know, some days it's just not there. Although I find if I get the words out, if I write anyway, I really can't usually tell the bad day writing from the good day writing afterward. I can only, you know, maybe I'll remember that I had a hard time that day I wrote it, but it won't feel that way. The writing itself is usually just about the same quality, or it's just something there that I can shape into something better, no matter how hard it was to write it in the first place. I like having written, for sure. But sometimes I think it's fun to write, and then when you're out on the road, what you miss, I think, is the writing.
Yeah.
You know, all the promotions are fun, but then you think, oh, there's this part of me I'm not even I have find it difficult to write when I'm doing promotions, like heavy launch events and things like that. But that part is difficult.
Do you write a certain number of words every day or a certain number of hours every day?
I would say probably the word count method is what I use, but I am not doing that right now. So I have already finished the first, second, third, whatever draft it is, for my next book, which will be out in spring of 2018. It doesn't have a title yet, so I can't tell you what it is. but it's, you know, I've got my edit letter, I've got some beta reader feedback, so I'm working on my revisions now to turn it in to my editor, into production. But, you know, so while I'm doing all those things and still doing a lot of teaching and, some events still, I'm not doing any word count at all right now, which doesn't feel great. I need to start working on my next project, but I'm also okay with the fact that it takes me a little while to figure out what that is.
Mm-hmm. You do a lot of promotion, and I wonder if you could list in the next 20 seconds, list all the bookstores, conferences, libraries, and events you've gone to in the last year to promote your book. Go.
BatcherCon, Left Coast Crime, Magna Cum Murder, Malice Domestic, Murder and Mayhem in Chicago, Murder and Mayhem in Milwaukee. I've been to Thriller Fest, but not recently. I've also done libraries in Iowa, bookstores in Minnesota, libraries in Indiana, where I'm from, bookstores and libraries in Illinois, where I live now. I went to Texas this year. I did Book People, which has been very supportive of all my books, and then I did Booked for Murder in Houston. Murder by the Book in Houston, which is a great mystery store that I'd never been to before.
Cool.
How to do.
So, yeah, you are busy. You are really busy. I know. I relate to that. I'm not doing that kind of promotion right now because I don't have a book coming out till November, but it gets
very,
very...
Do you like to do it, though?
What?
Do you
like
to do it?
I love doing
yeah.
it. I always say yes. I love
yeah.
doing it. I've done a lot of... The thing I don't like very much is blogging, but I've done a lot of guest blogs because that's what you do, so... I have a hard time finding inspiration for that, but I like going to events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like speaking. I like teaching a little bit, but I like just speaking, you know, better because then I don't have to do as much prep work.
And you're coming to Rocky Mountain Fiction Writers Colorado Gold Conference in a couple months.
I am.
And you're the keynote speaker.
I'm one of the keynote speakers.
That's fabulous.
I think, the woman who wrote Outlander is a keynote speaker, so I think I probably fall somewhere south of that. and then also Sherry Thomas.
she has more books out than you.
She does. I think people are super excited about her, but that's okay. I'm doing the closing keynote, I think is how you phrase it. I do the Sunday afternoon, the Sunday lunch before everybody goes home and has to make what everything they've learned part of their lives. So I think it's a fun position to be in. I think I can be that kind of speaker. I think it's fun.
That's going to be wonderful, and that's in my hometown. And
Yay.
We're going to do a jail tour when you're here.
I can't wait.
Yeah. So
you can show me all the behind the scenes stuff.
Right. Yep. All the behind the scenes stuff. So just brace yourself because it's heavy. But anyway, changing subjects to something not heavy. In your latest novel, The Day I Died, your protagonist is a handwriting analyst, and it's absolutely fascinating to me. And I don't know anything about handwriting analysis besides what I learned in your book. So I wanted to know where it lands on a scale between science and, say, psychic kittens?
it's probably It's definitely in the middle there somewhere. I think there are two parts of handwriting analysis, and one part is fairly solid science-based type stuff, and admissible in court. And that's the kind of thing where if you're trying to prove that someone signed a document or signed a document at a certain time, there are ways you can look at handwriting to make sure that it is signed by the person it's meant to have been signed by,
mm-hmm.
Or if it's a forgery, or if it was, you know, it's not as old as it's supposed to have been. It wasn't signed when it was said it was signed. That kind of aging of the paper and the ink, that stuff is all based in science. And so there's, you know, there's a lot of solid stuff going on there. But then you get the other end of things where they say that your handwriting says things about you, personality-wise. And that's the sort of thing that, you know, you could use in talking about criminals and crime, and that has been done, obviously. It's less solid ground. It's not necessarily, I don't think it's admissible in court. You can't, you know, no one's going to come out and try to prosecute somebody on the basis of their handwriting, saying that they're, you know, a psycho killer. But there are some interesting things about it that I learned that I think, you know, it's an interesting way of thinking about things, and I thought it made for an interesting story. I didn't do the kind of research I think people want me to have done. I haven't become a handwriting expert. You know, if I did that kind of research for every book I wrote, I would never actually get the book written. But I read another book by a handwriting analyst called, the book was called Sex, Lies, and Handwriting, and I don't know the name of the author, but it was really good. And I did some online research, and then I just sort of, you know, extrapolated from what I've heard. And I think I got it pretty right, because somebody who is a handwriting analyst that I've since met, actually his wife, they're both handwriting analysts, I didn't meet her, she sent me a nice note that said, oh, you're doing really well, I'm reading the book and I'm loving it. So,
wow.
You know, yeah, I actually met a handwriting analyst. I had him come and do my launch event in Chicago with me. So instead of just me talking about my book, which, you know, you get plenty of chances to do, and this is my, you know, my the town where I live and all my friends and family, and they have supported three books now, I thought, well, let's do something more fun. So he came, and I interviewed him about his work, and it was really fascinating. He was really a fun guy, and he told some interesting stories. They were just fascinating. I thought, okay, if I ever had a series with this character, I'm going to get back in touch with this guy, because he gave me like six ideas for future books. But
very cool. You know. Okay, I have two questions in my head right now.
Okay.
Well, I'll just start with the first one. You've been writing standalone novels, and your characters are pretty. You know, they're very well fleshed out. They're very vivid. And I wondered if you missed them when you go on to the next standalone novel and the next set of characters, and if you had considered doing this series.
You know, I'll start with the have I considered, because, yes, of course, mystery seems to be sort of, you know, based on everybody writing a series. I don't think there are that many of us who aren't. I have a hard time thinking of any other people. I know Megan Abbott doesn't right now, but I don't know if she ever has. And that's the only one I can think of who doesn't really do a series. But I did consider a series. When I wrote Little Pretty Things, I sort of set up that character and that situation and that location thinking she has more to her. There are more stories I could tell about this character. And I sort of constructed her thinking I'm going to give her lots of room to grow. So I made her fairly young. She's 28. And I gave her a job that was pretty bad. And then the concept I thought would be, well, she's going to get to a certain point in this book, and then in the next, she's going to be at a different not-so-great job, but maybe slightly less not-so-great than the one she started with. So she's going to, you know, go somewhere over time, but I'm going to give her plenty of, you know, chances to do that. So I left her lots of room to grow, She has some, and she's pretty naive in that book. But then when I finished that book, you know, the next thing you're supposed to do is just pick it up and start writing that character again and starting a new book, and I didn't do that. I went into the drawer instead and pulled out The Day I Died. So I don't know. It was a choice I made, but I wasn't really thinking I'm never going to do this as a series. I was just thinking I'm not going to do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that not doing it right now is my problem and why I don't have a series. I have always sort of needed that brand new shiny idea at the end of one project to get me excited about writing again. You know, because I think you probably understand this. You get sort of in one project and very deep into one project, and then you kind of want a break.
Right.
I don't know how to take a break if you have a series character. I mean, maybe you've got tips for me, and I'll learn how you do it. But I haven't been able to do that.
I have lots of ideas for my character Anna Blanc, and she has probably even more room to grow than your character. She has a lot of room to grow. But I know I do worry about, you know, I worry about two things. I worry about not getting a new fresh idea, and then I worry about getting tired of my old idea. But so far I'm doing fine. I'm interested in to see what happens to Anna, and she does change
mm-hmm.
quite a bit across books. So
that's cool.
Well,
I admire. I love reading series. I just I haven't figured out what mine is yet.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to ask you another handwriting, and now can I jump backwards? Because this question
yeah,
was,
sure.
like, in my head. How much is handwriting analysis used in court? Used by detectives.
You know, I don't know the answer to that, actually. I think, you know, as in the book, there's a note left behind, and so it's a piece of evidence, right? So, of course, they're going to take a look at that. And in the book, the question is, was this written by the person that we think it was?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's what Anna's – and my character's name is Anna, too. That's what she's looking at, and that's her specific job. And, of course, that's a very short book, so she has other things that she gets asked to do as well. I don't really know the answer in real life. I don't think it's the sort of thing that people – that. You know, especially that personality stuff, behavioral aspect of it, I don't think it's the sort of thing that they're going to pull out of the air. If a note is left behind, I think it's the sort of thing that they might treat it as a piece of evidence, try to find out as much about it as possible, who wrote it, when, and how old is it, and what can it tell us about the crime that we have to deal with.
And less about their personality.
No, you're the one who works in the jail. I don't know.
Right. I don't actually work in the jail. I study the jail.
You work for the jail. You study the jail. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So we're talking about fresh ideas. Do you ever go back and read your own books?
I would usually say no, and I would advise people not to do that. That seems like, madness. I did end up reading a little bit of Little Pretty Things. Last year's BoucherCon, I got asked to do a reading, and I had not done a lot of readings for Little Pretty Things. I did a lot of readings for The Black Hour, and then when I did Little Pretty Things, I did a lot of group events. I did a lot of panels. I put together a lot of events where I had other people with me, and then I didn't read from the book so much as I just, you know, talked about it and answered questions about writing and publishing. And so when I got asked to do this reading, I did a noir at the bar, which was not a bar, actually. It was in a hotel room, at a conference room in the hotel. I thought, I need to look at this and practice a little bit. I haven't really read from this. So I practiced couple of spots in there I thought I might read from, and I ended up sort of flipping through the book a little bit. It was on an airplane, and that's what I had in my hand. So I ended up reading the end of the book, which I had not done, you know, since probably before it was published, probably, you know, my last page proofs. And I found a typo, of course. I think it was a word missing or something. But I actually was sort of, like, pleased with how much I still liked it. You know, I didn't remember it word for word. Of course, it had been a while. I don't have a very good memory for that sort of thing, so I usually don't remember any of my own work word for word. But I was sort of surprised by, this is not bothering me to, you know, read something that I wrote and put away and can't change. So that was sort of a nice surprise.
That's why you recommend people don't, because they'll see something they want to change or see those typos that are driving that. Yeah.
They will find the typo that was, let through. And, of course, I did. And, when you read your own stuff, you want to fix it. You're always a little bit progressed beyond what you were when you did anything in the past. So I kind of expected to think, oh, I wish I could go back and change this paragraph or something like that. But it wasn't really like that. It was sort of nice to read something that I had written and think, oh, that's pretty good. It's not too bad. That's okay.
That's a very good sign.
Oh, big relief.
Okay, I have another question for you. So you crack me up, and your books are dead serious. And I'm kind of serious in person usually, and my books are humorous, so shouldn't we switch?
I would love to. Let's do a project together.
Let's do a project together. But do you ever think about...
I think my books have funny in them. I think they have
do.
A little bit of funny in them.
They definitely do.
I like putting a little bit of funny in there because that's the kind of book that I would like to read. I like to read a book, that has a mystery, that has deadly, serious, as you said, themes and story, but also has some humor in it. Usually, just not slapstick humor, but just, the way people say things or the jokes they make amongst themselves when they're talking. Sarcasm, lots and lots of sarcasm because, do what you're good at.
And it lightens, it's a counterpoint, it's a light counterpoint to the darkness.
Exactly. But I do love a humorous mystery. I loved Anna Blanc, as you know. I thought she was hilarious.
Thank you.
Can't wait to read the new one.
Oh, thank you. Okay, who do you read?
I really like Katrina McPherson. I love everything she writes, the historicals and the contemporaries. I like Tana French.
Who you're compared to often.
I don't know. I think it's a tone thing. With Katrina as well, the tone of her contemporaries, is probably what's similar. Because Tana's are, they're police procedurals. I don't know how to do a police procedural. I don't know what police procedure really is. Let's see, what have I got in front of me right now? I have got a stack of books in front of me, of course. I'm reading right now Without Conscience, The Disturbing World of the Psychopaths Among Us by Robert D. Hare, PhD. I am reading Ron Rash's Serena, which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not technically a mystery, but it's got some crime in it. I'm finishing up Sawbones by Melissa Lenhart, which is really good. It's also not a mystery, but it's got some, as I told her when I met her, we did an event together in Texas, and she said, oh, well, it's not a mystery. And I'm like, well, I'm sure we could find things to talk about. So I started reading it, and it has way more crime in it than anything I've ever written. So
wow.
We were fine. let's see what I've got here. I can't wait to read Don Winslow's The Force. I have a copy of that in front of me. And nonfiction. I read a lot of nonfiction essays and nonfiction about crime and stuff like that.
I'm kind of not surprised. I feel like your books all deal with kind of important issues. Serious issues, senseless violence, abuse, objectification of women, domestic violence. And I wanted to know, do you seed your books with these issues consciously, or do they sort of arise organically as you're just kind of plotting?
A little of both. I think I started out, I don't plot. I'm a Cancer, Team Cancer. Team Cancer, in which part of my process is pulling out my hair and crying for about 3 weeks because I don't know where my story is going. But proud Panther. I think I usually start from just one or two pieces and start feeling where the story goes And it often goes someplace that I didn't plan, that I wouldn't have, you know, seen coming. In the Black Hour, it's about economic disparity in some ways, like class issues. But, you know, it wasn't about those things until probably after the first draft. And I realized, oh, I know what I'm talking about now. And then I went back and rewrote it, you know, and made it clearer. And then with The Little Pretty Things, I think I was, you know, also talking about, I thought I was talking about economic disparity because I have her working a terrible job, you know, and her friend that she is, was always compared to and always won out over her is wealthier and more successful than she is. But then it was about these other things. You know, like, I think I start out with an idea of what it might be about, and then it turns into something else. My next book has, it's about a widow who goes and stays in a, I haven't had to talk about this book yet, you can tell, stays at a cabin in, or a house in Michigan in a dark sky park. A dark sky park is where you go to see the stars. They've controlled man-made light so you can see the night sky the way that nature intended. And I didn't really know what else the book was about other than, you know, widowhood and the stars, and of course there's going to be a body within the first act. But it ended up being about lots of other different things that I just couldn't have predicted. Even if I wanted to predict them, I think I would have been wrong.
So, okay. Yeah, me too.
Actually, can I step in here real quick? This is awesome. I could sit and listen. I could sit and listen to you guys talk all night, but I unfortunately need to start wrapping things up here. You asked Lori what she's reading. Jennifer, what are you reading?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've been on a James Elroy kick because he lives in Denver now. He's from L.A. He writes L.A. I write L.A. I live in Denver. He moved to Denver. And he does this film noir series that he hosts, and he picks the films out. And I always go, and there's like 15 people who go, and then we talk in the bar afterwards. So I've been reading his books. And I love Perfidious so much. So I've read The Black Dahlia, and now I'm on L.A. Confidential. So
that is awesome. And I would love to have both of you come back on either Authors on the Air or on my show that's starting in August, which is going to be the Blue Plate Special, a multi-genre type. Definitely, Jennifer, when your new book comes out, I hope you'll come back.
I will.
Cool. And Lori too. I want to hear more about this widow and the stars and the body, because there'll be a body, of course.
Of course.
Okay, let me do a little bit of homework here first. And I'll tell everyone that this has been a copyrighted podcast solely owned by Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. And support for this broadcast is made possible by Down and Out Books, celebrating 6 years of award-winning crime fiction. You can find out more at www.downandoutbooks.com. And thank you to Jennifer Kishlow and Lori Rader Day, and we hope to talk to you soon. Y'all have a good evening.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.